Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. Today, we remember 9/11. This Sunday will mark the 10th anniversary of the terrorist attacks that claimed 3,000 lives and forever changed America. On that day, 19 al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked four passenger jets, crashing two of them into the World Trade Center in New York. Hijackers crashed a third plane into the Pentagon. And the fourth plane, whose targets officials say was the nation's capital, well, that plane missed its intended target when a group of passengers tried to take back control of the plane. It crashed into a field in Pennsylvania. Todd Beamer, a former Fresno State student, was among those passengers who attempted to wrestle that plane out of the hands of the terrorist. Joining us today, two men who were there. They will share their thoughts and memories from that day. Eric Feld, who was working as a consultant with Baker's Trust in New Jersey. How we ended up in New York on that September day is a very interesting story. Also here with us, Andy Asolano, a former New York City firefighter who was among the first responders on the scene. Many of us know Andy, who now makes Clovis his home. We will be joined later by Kamal Abu Shamshish, director of the Islamic Cultural Center of Fresno. And we also want to hear from you. We want your calls with your thoughts and memories of 9/11. You can call us at 275-8989 or toll-free 224-8989. And we are also online at kbpr.org. Let's begin with Andy. First of all, Andy, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Now, you were a New York firefighter at the time, but it's my understanding on that day you were off duty.
Yeah, I had just gotten off a 24-hour shift. I was in the shower preparing to head home.
And when did you hear? You never made it home that day.
No, I didn't. I was in the shower when they first plane hit, and the day shift from my firehouse went in to help with the initial plane crash. And with that, we had received a phone call that Danny Sir had been killed. He was the first guy killed that morning by someone who had jumped out a window and killed him instantly. So when we heard that call, we the 12 of us that had gotten off that morning, we jumped on a spare fire truck and dumped our entire triage medical supplies in the hose bed and headed into the city.
You guys didn't know what you were going into at that time.
No, at that point we were not sure. We had just, when we were getting ready to leave the firehouse, we had seen the second plane come in, and we knew it was something bad, but we didn't know the extent of it. And as we were heading over the bridge, the Mayday calls came that the Tower 2 was coming down. And we imagined, oh, my goodness, the whole top of that building just fell off, never dreaming that the entire building actually did come down. And we pulled up on the scene to a location we had been many, many times, and we couldn't recognize anything. We got as close as we could. It was chaos. There was debris everywhere. And as we exited the rig, they called Mayday a second time, and second tower came down. And when the smoke cleared enough to see, I had lost 13 close friends and 343 brother firefighters.
It's still so hard to comprehend, even today, I think.
Yeah, it's a rough week for me, but I'm glad. You know, people ask me all the time, "Are you okay with talking about it?" And for me, it's kind of therapy. It's kind of it shows that we remember those who sacrificed that day, and we just want to keep it in our minds. And I hope 50 years from now that this is the big story, you know, 60 years later, and nothing else has happened.
Erica Field, who is also with us today. Now, thank you. You were working as a consultant with Bankers Trust in New Jersey. And, you know, how did you end up in New York that day?
When you look at the footage of the second plane coming in and hitting the tower, that's from the vantage point of where my offices were in Jersey City. That was either Exchange Place or Journal Square, like that area. And hang one second.
Want to say hi to Andy?
Yeah. He's most of the people that I knew that were first responders that I prayed with that morning went to heaven that day. He's the first one I've seen that's.
And we should also mention that you're also a chaplain as well.
At the time, yeah, I was in that, yeah. And but it's just, it's an honor to meet him. I have firemen and policemen all through my family, and, you know, these guys were amazing to be with, you know, be a part of things that day with. I was with Deutsche Bank, and I was a consultant, and I'd gotten a speeding ticket upstate, paid it, and would commute down, you know, on the train. Got something in the mail that I thought was a receipt. I looked at it, and here it was. The check was sent back, and they said I'd paid too much. And I was like, okay, what do I do? They said, well, you got to give us the right amount. You're going to go, you know, we're going to arrest you. I said, okay, no problem. So the next day I was going to go in and get the proper amount and drop it off at the police department up in Blooming Grove. And the next morning was 911. So I went in early to work and took the PATH train and was coming up through the World Trade Center, through, you know, the underground. There's a lot of escalators and stuff. It came in basically in the bathtub, the big cement area, and then would work its way up. And when I'm still not positive of this, but I was either coming up through the basement, the area, or right outside just after the first plane went in. It's still fuzzy for me exactly, but I was right there under it with all that. And we didn't feel it.
Right. The people on the ground at that time.
It was, well, you're looking at, you're going up a quarter mile basically. The second plane, you see, the first plane went in, and in the city, there's stuff going on all the time. And it's a weird combination because on the one hand, it's like living out here. You can tell when a cricket trips the wrong way. It's like, okay, yeah, this is not right. But at the same time, you get construction stuff happening. And, you know, also the PATH train, it's a subway, so banging it around. But it was, you know, this was my headphones and everything was cool. One of the guys who I commuted with, Frank Neary, really nice guy. He had just come through a life-threatening auto accident, broken his back, nearly died in that. He was with, I believe, Marsh McLennan, and I was one of the last people to see him. We went up the escalators. He went up the stairs to his office, and I made out, you know, to the right, went out past Cinnabon and into a farmer's market that was actually setting up at the base of the towers. And it's the last I saw him. He was taken out.
And you didn't – when the chaos started,
yeah.
you didn't leave.
No. Actually, and it's part of being from the family I'm from. I'm from a long line of people that you don't walk away from people that are in trouble. It's part of my beliefs as well. And I was actually down getting the proper amount money order down by the bull, you know, down the bank or the post office down there. That's when the second plane went in. And I broke out a small cross that I had. There was a little sapphire cross. It was from a kiosk at the base of the South Tower. I just bought about a month before. And identified myself as a chaplain. I'd done a lot of non-ordained or however you want to call it type ministries and stuff over the years and been with a lot of different churches. So I went up and did whatever I could as far as that sort of thing. Prayed with any police officers, fire department people, anybody I could find. Just said, mind if I pray with you? Like, sure. So I was just praying for people. And I got misdirected. Me and another little priest, an Italian priest from the Lower East Side, we got misdirected where we're supposed to meet up with the other chaplains. And that's what saved our lives, truthfully. We were actually almost in the North Tower. And they said a third plane was coming in. It was simply an engine falling. So, like, you know, forgive me, you know, Father, wherever you are. I picked them up and just ran with them back up to Broadway. And we got misdirected, and I was coming back up from down a little lower on Broadway. And this is all basically right around the footprint of the South Tower area. And that's when the South Tower started to come down. I heard that. It's a sound I'll never forget. I saw it. And it was – I thought it was an airplane coming right in my head. The one thing I was thinking was I love airplanes. At least I'm going out with something that I love. But anyway, you know, then I went in. The planes came down, or the building came down, dove into a building, did a lot of bringing people in off the street. Me, a police officer, an EMT, took care of people, any kind of health concerns with them. And then once we cleared them out with the second responders, I went in with the second responders, and that's when we all walked up to Brooks Brothers, which was the corner basically there. And what people see is what's left of the facade. And that's when it hit us. There was nothing there anymore. And that was, you know.
Andy, being there and responding as a first responder, did you have time to think about anything or the magnitude of this? Or were you just trying to get people
No,
out?
There's no time to stop and think. We're trained. First responders are trained to react. And we use a lot of our gut instinct to do what we're supposed to do. Granted, that day was – the scale was enormous, but we knew that the guys that had gotten there before us were in trouble.
Yeah.
We had no idea that so many people had gotten out, thankfully. Those buildings at any given time can have close to 50,000 people in them.
Mm-hmm.
People around here can't imagine the magnitude of how big those buildings were. Their footprint, 16 square acres, 100 stories each, so 200 floors. And one of the things that sticks in my head is I was able to see a little bit, I started to notice that there were no desks, there were no chairs, there were no file cabinets, there were no computers. All of the things that you would imagine to see piles of with that many offices were gone. They were pulverized to dust. The only thing that survived the actual collapse was the papers. There mm-hmm. was papers floating for hours.
Yes.
And blocks and blocks and blocks of papers, you know. And I said, well, anything that was in there is gone.
Yeah.
And a lot of miracles happened that day. And the fact that only 3,000 people were lost.
I think it's hard for so many people to even imagine that, it really could have been more than 3,000, because for those of us who were at home watching this, just like you, a lot of us didn't know what was going on. You know, it was almost unimaginable. And I know folks at home, you probably are thinking about that day. I think this week a lot of us are probably thinking about that day, because so many of the images are being brought back. And they really, really grab you.
The images are different. The images are different. Like, you
than
know
what it was when you're there.
Yeah, when you're going through that, like what Andy's saying, I mean, you're in hyperdrive. I was dealing with, you know, anything I had in front of me, a pregnant lady, she's 7 months along, a guy with asthma, people with all kinds of concerns. And you're just, you know, getting every – immediately, I had several hundred people, ladies, having to go to the bathroom in a building that we kind of took over as the second tower or first tower came down. So there's things like that that are very practical. And you're also – you're in it. I mean, from the training and stuff you get into, because I did a lot of Red Cross work and stuff. It's like you're just, okay, what now? What next? And – but the pictures and stuff, like I didn't see the pictures.
Because you were saying
yeah.
that it was the next day that – you had a chance to kind of take all of this in. So for both of you,
yeah.
was it different a few days out after?
Well, for me, I spent all the way till Sunday pretty much at the scene digging.
Yeah.
I had a couple really close friends of mine that were missing, and it wasn't until Sunday when it started to rain that we were all ordered off the pile, mm-hmm. which is what it became known as, the pile. And
I can remember it was very hard for the first responders to leave. People did not want
no,
to leave.
No, you couldn't get us to leave. I pretty much spent the better part of 2 months there. I think I went home twice in 2 months. The only reason I ended up leaving was Chief had seen me coughing up blood, and I got ordered off the pile. He took my badge number. And so he ordered me to the medical office, and that was the last time I was active firefighter. I was put on light duty, and I spent the next 18 months trying to get back. And unfortunately, my lungs sustained too much damage, and so I had to do what I could at that point. And unfortunately, the only thing I could do at that point was to attend funerals.
Mm-hmm. There were so many.
Yeah, the obits were every day. There was tons of them. The firefighters, guys that I knew, you guys were going to funerals, like, what, 2-3 a weekend?
Two and three a day.
Yeah.
I was on medical leave, so yeah. My assignment was I was assigned to the counseling unit,
yeah.
Where I initially received counseling, and then I guess I kind of went through it pretty well, and mm-hmm. my counselor told me that I needed to speak to other people to help them because I had been through a little bit more than others. I had gotten divorced 2 weeks before 9/11. Mm-hmm. And, then 9/11 happened and I lost my friends. And then I pretty much was told I was never going to be a firefighter again. So my counselor was like, Andy, I don't know how you have this much. How do you get out of bed in the morning? He said, you need to tell other guys because a lot of other guys having a lot harder time. And you need to tell them what you've been through and that they need to, mm-hmm. Keep on going. And so I did that for about 18 months, and then they finally officially retired me. And, I was looking for a new place to live, and I came out on that trip that Pelco had.
Yes.
And this was the first good place for me after 9/11, and, 3,000 miles away, people cared. And
that was the thing about that time. That's what I remember from that. Yes, I remember the horror. And the tragedy, but I also remember how we came together,
unbelievable,
as a country and as a nation. It was unbelievable, and there's so many times you want that feeling mm-hmm. back. You don't want the tragedy, but that feeling we had as a country and as a nation. And what do you all remember from that day? How did it impact you? You can call us with your thoughts at 275-8989 or 224-8989. That's 800, or online at kbpr.org. Let's talk a little bit about following the event, in the days following the event. For you, Eric, how I'm sure it changed you.
The thing that people need to realize is what was happening on that morning, right then and there. It was handled in different ways, almost like in concentric rings going outside of the area. Like when I walked up through Manhattan, I was just covered in dust and crud, and had been escorted out by the police because anyone who was a civilian was escorted out of the area. There are people just sitting there having lunch, like a cafe is just looking, because in the city you got stuff going on all the time. And it was as the hours and as the footage saturated, people began to have a response. Where I lived upstate. I'd be on a train and would, an hour and a half, and I'd be up kind of in the middle of nowhere upstate. And truthfully, like people talk about, oh, it was, the Muslims or whatever. Well, the immediate little redneck bodega that I had right there where I lived was owned by guys that were from Canada that were Muslim. And they were totally distraught, and they were like, Eric, this is not what Islamic – this is not what Islam is not like. This is not what Allah is like. This is crazy people. Please come in. Whatever you need. We know you lost your job. We know we just – anything you need, we'll settle it up later. Don't even worry about it. And these guys were the most compassionate, beautiful guys. And they were walking around. They had to wear American flags or they were going to get beat up, a couple of more beat up. They had a huge flag that covered the entire building that got stolen three times. They were threatened constantly. I mean, they were beating up Puerto Ricans because they were brown, because people thought they were Muslim. That was a whole negative.
That was one of the the huge negatives when you take a look at this. Yeah, it did bring the country together, but anybody who happened to look Middle Eastern –
and it was
really
had
a tough time.
Yeah. And that aspect of it, that was hard. Now, I've studied Islam. I mean, even though I'm a Christian, it's like I know different beliefs and different religions. I know people. And it's like these – there's so many things you hear personally, like say the conspiracy theories. I don't have any time for that. People ask me about it. And I'm like, no. You know, come on. You got to be kidding me. And the further you go away from the situation, the more surrealistic it gets, you know. That's why I talk about it. Like I'll be lecturing down at City. I talk to people about it when they ask me to, because it's like otherwise folks just get a very distorted view.
Now, you went back a year later.
Yes, yes. I was actually I worked down in the area down on like the Wall Street area, so to speak, the money district. And they regathered our project and I worked down there. And a year later, I was a docent at the chapel, which was the rescue area, the respite area. And I was given just different things to do. When they realized that I was actually a survivor and had been there, they gave me this quilt that was made somewhere down south. And it had the towers. It was a patchwork quilt, the towers coming down. And they had little strips of paper of all the people who had passed in the towers. And for 9 hours, I stood there. And I was supposed to not let people touch the quilt. Well, no. I had families coming through, and a lot of them were people who had lost their loved ones. And for a lot of them, that was the only thing they got to touch to say goodbye to. So I had a guy who talked with his wife for 45 minutes on his cell phone. She was on the roof. There was no cell phone coverage during this, and yet he was able to talk to her. I had an Indian girl. They're not real big. Indians are tiny people. Whole family. And she said to me, I know I'm in a Christian church, but do you think my sister's name might be on this quilt? And I was like, yeah, sweetheart, let's find it, you know, and we did. And I just remember looking and seeing these little fingers just touching and saying goodbye, because most of the people who passed, they were just given a little box of ash and that was it.
And it's so hard for those families. Many of us, we may have the opportunity to watch some of the specials they're airing now about the children from 9/11. And, you know, when you listen to their stories, it has had such a huge impact.
Well, one of the kids is actually here. A kid I was last year lecturing down at FCC, the social science course. Professor Tretza says, go ahead and talk to the students. I've been doing it for the past few years. One of the kids came up and he asked, he was a nice kid, little redheaded Irish kid, round face, great kid. And he said, how'd you get here? And I told him, he goes, my dad was there that day. And I said, you know, was he taken? He said, yeah. And it was great to give him a hug. And he's a good kid, but it's been 10 years and, you know, his dad's been gone.
You know, Andy, what made you decide to attend the memorial service in Clovis?
Well, like I had said, things were pretty bad for me at that point. I really was kind of lost. Pretty much everything I knew had been taken from me that I loved. So a good friend of mine saw where I was at, and he said, you know what, there were trips all over the place for us. You know, the rest of the country wanted to honor us the best they could. And he said, you're going to come with me to California. And I was like, I really don't want to do anything resembling fun. Mm. And he's like, no, you need to come. And he pretty much forced me, and we headed to Newark Airport, and we got on a bus that took us out to the tarmac, and we got on a plane, and we got fighter jet escorted across the country, and we landed here to marching bands and medals and signed autographs for hours, and it saved my life. I mean, I honestly believe it definitely saved my life, because things were not good for me. And
you were certainly embraced here.
Oh, absolutely. The people out here have been incredible then and even since. And I've lived here now. It's coming up on 7 years. And I love living here. I love the people. Every year, people want to know. People want to hear the story. And they genuinely want to care. It's not like they just want to see the gore. They want to know what happened and what it was like for someone to experience that because they care. And it means a lot to me. There's a lot of events coming up in the next few days for me. And I'm looking forward to putting them behind me, putting the 10th anniversary behind me. But I'm also looking forward to speaking to people and getting these events going.
Before we let you go, both of you, mm-hmm. tell us, what do you want people to remember? What do you want them to take away from this? You know, because we, like you said, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary. There will be a lot of events, but...
For me, personally, it was like it was just a couple weeks ago in a way, but it's been 10 years. It's very important. I feel like because those people passed away and the guys, the firefighters and the police officers, you know, who formed like a human wall to get everybody out of the building, a human cattle chute. I mean, there's just so much effort that went into it. You know, each day is a gift. Don't squander your life. Don't waste it. Make each day count. Not in a manic sense, but just appreciate it. I appreciate my friends and my enemies. I tell them why I'm grateful for them in both ways. I think the other thing is it was a very, very personal event. It was not – there's so much hype and political stuff surrounding it and everything. And to me, that wasn't what it was. It was a terrible thing. It was a hijacking of other very, very, very good things, including bona fide religions and people's beliefs and people's lives. And I choose to remember the towers as the World Trade Center. It's not Ground Zero. It's the towers. I choose to remember the hope, the optimism, the strong work. And I also really appreciate the way the city came together. We were all kind of heartbroken for the longest time. And then after a while, we became New Yorkers again. And it was like, you know, a little shot in the arm. You're getting in the subway. You know, you're done with that sort of thing. And it keeps you going.
Andy?
For me, it's I speak at some schools around the country. I've been to anywhere from K through 12. And the message I try to stress is that don't let any of your beliefs ever get that extreme. This was perpetrated by a group of people whose beliefs took over their lives to the point where they felt that this is the only way they can express themselves. And yeah. we live in a world that we live in a world that there's a lot of reasons to dislike what other people do, but don't ever let it consume you like that. And we just need to remember what happened that day and how all those innocent people were killed, and the country pulled together, and the terrorists failed, in my opinion. They did not break our spirit. They did not break us financially. Pretty much, as far as New York was concerned, it was a blip on the radar. A few days later, the streets were passable again, and people were back to work. The massive recovery was still going on, but life, as most people knew it, continued on. And those of us that have direct involvement, we have to live with it every day. But I personally don't let it consume me. I don't let it take over my life. I take it as something to be grateful for, that I'm here. And I remember the things that happened to me while I was down there that tell me that I'm here for a reason. And if I have to go out of my way to accomplish it, because I was spared for some reason. And hopefully getting the word out and speaking to people and letting them know what I've been through and how it's never that bad. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you're feeling depressed, it's never that bad. It could always be a whole lot worse. And life's going to go on tomorrow. And what happens today, you know, say your prayers, speak to whoever you believe in in the morning, and ask him to guide you through your day and continue on.
Well, thank you both so much for being willing to share your stories. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. Joining me now is Kamal Abu Shamshish, director of the Islamic Cultural Center in Fresno. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
One of our previous guests, Mr. Field, he talked about the experience of a Muslim family that he knew. And most of us can remember that it was a very difficult time for Muslims and those of Middle Eastern descent right after the attacks. What do you recall? Because we had situations here as well in Fresno.
It has been very difficult on everyone. It has been difficult on Muslims. It has been difficult on Sikhs. We have over 80 Muslims who perish in the attacks who work in the World Trade Center. We have some connections to them in the valley. We have siblings here. We have first responders who are Muslims who died in the attacks. It was a difficult time for their families as well, trying to sort out the terrorists from those who were innocent victims. Unfortunately, we experienced a wave of hate crimes that targeted not just only Muslims, anyone who looks like a Muslim, especially the Sikh community. Those kind of events, hopefully, will learn from them. The country will learn that this is something that at times of difficulty like 9/11, the entire community need to come together to reflect on it.
Now, during that time, the Muslim Center, you all focused on education, and there was a lot of outreach.
We still do, because on 9/11 and until today, you have two things that came to the surface. You have the cream and the scum. You have the cream, who is the overwhelming majority of fellow Americans who want answers to questions, who are interested in exploring Islam and knowing Muslims and together reflect on the painful memories of 9/11. And you have opportunists who rise to the occasion, who exploit the pain of our country. So we have to deal with both, the genuine interest about Islam and those who are opportunists for their own purposes, exploring the pain the pain of our country.
What was it like here? The religious community did come together. There were a lot of events held together.
A lot of events were held and are still happening. This coming Saturday, we have the Interfaith commemoration of the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and we have a survivor of, we have a family relative of a 9/11 victim on flight United 93, Nancy Meyer, representing the group September 11 Families for a Peaceful Tomorrows, will be the keynote speaker at the Islamic Cultural Center of Fresno. And we're inviting children, especially those who are around 10 years old, to release doves at the Islamic Center to send a message of hope for a better future. A lot of attention will be paid or will be special attention to children during that time.
You know, you talked about, I know there was a lot of education then. You all are still focused on that. Do you feel it's made a difference? Do you think things have changed somewhat?
Things have changed. We have a tendency that we respond only sometimes when there is a crisis. However, our educational efforts have been ongoing, and especially working with the interfaith communities, working to educate about the needs of Muslim patients, for example, in hospitals, working with the schools. It's just education about the overall diversity within our community. And around 9/11, we focus about September 11, the impact of 9/11 on the Muslim community. One of the facts that the overwhelming majority of victims of terrorism globally are Muslims. So when Al-Qaeda targeted the United States on 9/11, it part of a scheme for a radical organization that does not reflect my faith. However, my faith and the faithful paid a heavy price for the acts of a small group of extremists.
I know there was this phrase or statement that was made during that time, and it stayed, was that, you know, the terrorist attacks or the terrorists tried to hijack your religion, the Muslim religion.
Indeed, they attempted to do so. However, the community responded immediately, whether be it in terms of condemnation of the attacks itself, whether be it the ongoing dialogue with the different facets of our community, be it inner faith or the law enforcement agencies. I personally train the local law enforcement agencies on issues related to the Muslim community, and that has been an ongoing dialogue since 9/11.
Right, and there will be events this weekend, as you did mention.
Absolutely. We have the 9/11 10th anniversary commemoration at the Islamic Center this coming Saturday, September 10, at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming in and joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, President Bush, we all may recall, learned of the terrorist attacks while sitting in a Florida classroom. With him was the Secretary of Education and Terry Abbott, an Education Department chief. Well, today, Abbott works for Pearson, an education company. And in an interview with Valley Public Radio, Terry Abbott shares his memories from that day and tells us why he thinks it's so important to teach young people about 9/11. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Abbott.
Thank you for having me. We appreciate it very much.
Well, you know, many of us remember the video of President Bush, you know, sitting in that classroom at Booker Elementary School in Florida and getting word that a plane had hit the World Trade Center building. When did the president become aware that we were under attack and this was just not a terrible accident?
Well, that would have been the moment that his chief of staff, Andy Card, walked into the classroom and leaned over into his ear and whispered, "Mr. President, a second plane has hit the second tower. America is under attack." Andy is the one who actually gave the president the word that day. I was in another room in the school, and we saw the reports on the television monitors at the same time, too. So we all knew, all of us who were with the president that day knew at that moment we were under attack.
What was it like for not only the president, but those of you who were with him? Describe those moments right after the attacks.
Well, it was scary. It was chaotic, as you would expect in a time of sudden warfare like that. Something called the fog of war, and I experienced it that day as we were all trying to get our hands around what had happened. And the president knew that also that he needed to make a statement to the American public and to the terrorists right away, and that was job one after he got out of that classroom and made sure the kids were okay. So a few minutes later, he walked into the library right past me, right where I was, and he walked up to that microphone, and he looked into the audience, and he said what he had to do to the terrorists who were watching worldwide, and that was, "Terrorism against our nation will not stand." He made that famous statement there. I think at that point, he announced to the terrorists, "We're coming after you. We're not going to stand for this."
Now, you said you were in another room, and you were watching this. You were watching. You saw the planes hit
the
building.
Yes, we saw those reports of the plane hitting, the second plane hitting, and that's when all of us who were on the White House detail and all of us there with the president knew that this was a very different thing, that this was a full-scale attack. And so we all began doing what we're supposed to do under the government's top-secret continuity of government plan. That's the secret plan that the government has to make sure that it continues to function in cases of national emergency. So all of us had jobs to do, so it was a scary time, but we had to keep our heads about us and get started protecting the president, protecting the Secretary of Education that I worked for, because he's also in line of succession to the presidency. Sure that we worked with the kids and that they were okay and that we got the leadership of the country out of there.
But, you know, just like the rest of us, I know myself when I was at home and I saw that and I was watching the planes, you know, you're in somewhat disbelief in the beginning. So for you, just as a citizen, what was going through your mind?
It was disbelief for just a moment. You know, when we saw the reports of the second plane hitting, it just took a couple of seconds to figure out what that meant. And the thing that struck us was, one, the loss of life that surely happened in New York, but also where else are the that's hitting us. Where are these attacks coming? At that moment, we didn't know. And we didn't know if maybe the whole government operation was under attack. And so that was a very, very scary at that point. I think that the president kind of settled everybody down, and we all went about and tried to do our jobs after that. But it was a frightening time. And he had the dual role that day. He had to make sure that the kids stayed calm and they were taken care of at the same time that he sent his signal to our nation and to the terrorists who did that about what was what our response was going to be. So the president had the dual role that morning as well.
You know, 10 years later, as you look back, you know, what are your feelings today?
Well, it was a life-changing moment for me. It made terrorism and national security and safety a top issue for me, and it also made education about what happened on that day and what led up to 9/11 and what happened afterwards a top priority for me as well. We're working all over the country right now with teachers to help them to teach kids in these last few days before the 10th anniversary of 9/11 about what happened that day and what it was all about. The Pearson Company has put a bunch of material for free at the onlinelearningexchange.com for teachers and students and parents to access, because this next week is going to be a very difficult time for teachers. They're struggling with how to teach kids about what happened.
In your role now, you currently work for the publishing company Pearson, and you all are trying to get educational materials out to students and educators, because when you think about it, a lot of these kids weren't even born 10 years ago.
You're exactly right. It's hard to believe, but about two-thirds of the children who are in school right now have no personal memory of 9/11. To them, this is history. And so for that reason, it's critically important that we use this 10th anniversary as what they call in education a teachable moment, an opportunity to get in front of those kids and say, this was a transformative event in our lifetimes. It's going to affect everything that happens in your lifetime, and you need to learn about it. So Pearson has put out for teachers and parents and students all over the country online for free some amazing materials about 9/11, what led to it, and what happened after that. All that's available online at onlinelearningexchange.com, and it's all there for teachers this next week. This next week will be the most difficult time for teachers, because they're going to be struggling with how to teach kids about 9/11 and what happened that day. So these materials are structured to help teachers to do that.
You know, because when I think about it, my child was maybe 7 or 8 when this happened. And I think about, you know, for her, going through security at the airport is no big deal, because that's all she's ever known.
Absolutely. It's second nature for the older kids now to take off their shoes and do everything they have to do at the airport. And they have no knowledge of what it was like before 9/11. But, their school security is different now than it was before 9/11. And, you know, they're looking at a very different economy, very different airline industry. They're looking at maybe being involved themselves in two wars one of these days, because we're still at war because of what happened on 9/11. So the whole world has changed, and they need to know about how different it was before and why it's important now that they carry on the rigor of the war against terrorism.
And you said that these educational materials, they're not just for teachers and educators. You say the general public can also use them?
Absolutely. Anybody can use them. They're great for parents to sit down with kids and talk about what happened on 9/11. And they're broken down by age group so that they're age-appropriate materials for elementary kids and for the high school kids. You want the elementary kids to learn about the heroes of that day and how it changed our country, but you don't want to have the elementary children seeing the really graphic images. But the older children, they need to study about all the details of what happened that day, and they need to know about the rise of Al-Qaeda and all the things that brought us to that day. So that's why they're divided into age-appropriate material. So it's something that parents everywhere can use.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Abbott. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for the time.
Now, this weekend, there will be events marking the 10th anniversary of 9/11. at Schneider Electric, formerly known as Pelco, there will be a public observance at the California Memorial to honor and remember those tragically lost on that day. And Andy Ocelano, who was also here with us today, he will be at that memorial service. And if you want to find another way, and if you want to get involved that day, you might want to participate in the human race in the day of service. Here to tell us about that event is Kathy Capels, Director, Hands-On Central California. Thank you, Kathy, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the things that came from this is people wanting to give back. And that's what we try to remember about that day. It's not just for memorial service, but it's also about doing something.
Right. 9/11 is no longer just a day of remembrance. It is also a national day of service. And the reason for that is that the families, the victims of 9/11, wanted this date to be remembered not for the terrorist attack, but for the response that people had to the terrorist attack. We came together as a nation. We came together as a world to help the people that were suffering in New York and Pennsylvania and Washington, D.C.
And so we will have a day of service here, but also the day before on the 10th, there is another way that people can get involved.
Right. We are having, we're bringing an event to Fresno that takes place across the country. It's called The Human Race. And it is this year a walk that allows people the opportunity to come together to support nonprofit organizations that serve in our community. And they'll be able to go out, and it's just 2 miles so that everyone can participate this year. And we'll be offering them the opportunity to raise money for the organizations that they care about in this community that are providing service every day, organizations like the American Red Cross.
You know, because it was a lot of these organizations that really responded and stepped up on those the day of the attack and the days following that attack.
And every day since. You know, I think that's the thing often that we forget. 9/11 was a horrible day, but every day since, people have been giving service to our country. They've been fighting wars for our country. And those veterans and the soldiers need to be honored and remembered as well. And so providing service activities that we can respond and help these organizations, these soldiers, is Hands-On's way of providing a service event in the community on this weekend.
And for the National Day of Service, I know we're kind of talking about two different mm-hmm. events, but on the National Day of Service, you know, what kind of response have you received since that started?
You know, National Days of Service have been going on for a long time, and 9/11 is the newest of the National Days of Service. It became a National Day of Service in 2009 as part of the Edward N. Kennedy Service Act. And so we last year did a food pantry organization with the food bank. We served 1,100 families last year with food. And this year, we wanted it to be broader and bigger to be able to support the entire community. And that's why we brought the human race to Fresno.
And the human race, that same day, you're also going to have like a safety preparedness event.
Right. Out at Sierra Vista Mall in Clovis, thanks to Heald College, our sponsor, we are able to do an emergency preparedness and safety awareness fair that will have service activities as part of it. One of the things, you know, when the Red Cross goes out in response to fires here in our community, they provide the families with comfort kits. And so people have a chance out there to be able to build a comfort kit that will go on to the fires. People are cold oftentimes when they're victims and they're in police cars, and we'll be making no-sew blankets that we can donate. We're going to be doing an activity for our veterans because Operation Stand Down is coming up in a couple of weeks, and a lot of our veterans are homeless and they need toiletry kits, and so we'll be building toiletry kits. So we have a variety of service activities. The National Committee for 9/11 wants all of us to do some act of service. They are hoping for 1 million acts of service on the weekend leading up to 9/11. It starts on the 8th, goes through the 11th. And they also want people to pay tribute. And they're encouraging people to go to the website 9/11.org, post their tributes and post what they're going to do. It's called the I Will campaign, and you can post your on 911.org.
Just how important is volunteering?
You know, volunteering is American. It is the one thing that we do in America that we have been doing since the day we were founded, and it really shows our patriotism when we're giving back to the communities that give so much to us. So, you know, it means a lot, and children really need to, as a part of, you know, 9/11 and every day, learn how to give. And, you know, providing a service act to our community is one way to show them that they can contribute starting at a very young age to making our world a better place.
Now, for the human race, people can still sign up to participate, correct?
Correct. We are looking to have 911 walkers out there, and the walk starts at 9/11 in the morning. And we are still accepting reservations for it. You can go to handsoncentralcal.org, the website, or you can call our phone number, 237-3101. There is a $10 registration fee, and that covers your T-shirt and breakfast that morning.
But also, all the money raised, that's one of the good things, because so many of our nonprofits are having a tough time now because mm-hmm. of the recession. But all of the money raised by the group or the individual walker, it goes straight to that nonprofit.
Absolutely. You know, we looked at a stewardship model when we were looking at 9/11, and that, you know, we all have to give time, talent, and treasure to our communities to make sure that our organizations have what they need to serve their clients. And so 100% of the donations for the human race will go to the organization that the walker chooses to donate to.
And what time are you asking people to be there?
The walker registration starts at 7 o'clock, and that's when breakfast will also start, and the race will start following the tribute event. We're going to have a tribute event starting at 8:30, and then we'll start the walk at 9/11.
But also for that day, this is really being made possible. Everybody participating, all the organizations participating and coming together to help, they're all volunteering their time.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's the one of the best parts about being hands-on Central California is that we never work alone. We always bring together a group of organizations and individuals to support the efforts that we're putting forth around service. And this day, there's been a committee been working on it since June. It involves business, Healed College, IQ Vision Cares, TW Telecom. It involves organizations like Fresno County EOC, the Red Cross, the Girl Scouts, and it involves individuals like you, Juanita, helping out to make sure that everybody knows about this event.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. And there are other events. We just want to mention the Houchin Community Blood Bank is holding the We Remember Blood Drive. That is in Bakersfield from September the 8th through the 10th as part of the National Day of Service. So when we say National Day of Service, we're talking across this country. And frankly, there would be nothing better than to witness than a lot of people coming out and sharing and giving of their time. You think about what a great way to remember all those people.
And we really encourage them to go to 911.org and post what they're going to do on that day.
And just, you know, tell us what you're thinking. There were so many thoughts from that day, and we hope you all take this opportunity to really get involved and kind of get into the spirit of what this should be about.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, when we think about 9/11, all of us have our thoughts and our memories from that day. And we have kind of put together a audio recording of just what it was like on that day that it happens, as you take a moment just to reflect back on that day, 9/11.
The concept's not answering. Somebody stabbed in business class. and I think there's mates that we can't breathe. And I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked.
We have some planes. Just stay quiet and you'll be okay. We're returning to the airport.
Noticed flame and an awful lot of smoke from one of the towers of the World Trade Center. We are just coming up on this scene. This is easily three quarters of the way up. We are, this has, whatever has occurred has just occurred.
This just in, you are looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
And then all of a sudden, I thought it sounded kind of loud, and then I looked up, and all of a sudden it smashed right dead into the center of the World Trade Center.
Not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now remember, oh my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That just exploded.
We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
There is debris flying out of that south tower.
We saw a burst of flames a moment ago just before
that
we talked
to That was the aircraft that just hit building number one.
NPR's Tom Chelton is at the Pentagon. Tom, do you know anything more about this crash, this report of a crash at the plane crash at the Pentagon?
A plane did crash into the, what's essentially the southwest side of the building. There's smoke all over that part of the building, and it's billowing into the courtyard.
The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed.
The whole side has collapsed?
The whole building has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed?
The building has collapsed.
And there's, you can see, perhaps the second tower, the front tower, the top portion of which is collapsing. Good Lord. There are no words.
Mark, apparently it's terrorists and they're hell-bent on crashing the aircraft. So if you can, try to take over the aircraft. I love you, sweetie. Good luck. Bye-bye.
United 93, Cleveland. United 93, do you hear Cleveland Center?
Those were the sounds from 9/11. Thank you for joining us. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.